They were cold. The group that had made the trip from New York did not survive the first day in Paris Island. I never saw the blonde singer again, nor most of the others. Somehow, 60 of us, among the hundreds who had been aboard that ancient train, became a training platoon, were assigned a number, and placed under the charge of the drill sergeant who had delivered the welcoming address. Sergeant Bellow was a Southerner with a fine contempt for Northerners. It was not that he favored the Southerners. He merely treated them less sarcastically. He was big. I would say 6 feet 4 inches, 230 pounds. But above all, he had a voice. It pulsed with power as he counted the cadence, marching us from the administration building to the quartermaster's. It whipped us, this ragged remnant, and stiffened our slouching civilian backs. Nowhere else but in the Marine Corps do you hear that peculiar lilting cadence of command. Thrip fall your left! Thrip fall your left! It sounds like an incantation, but it is merely the traditional 3-4-year left elongated by the southern drawl, made sprightly by being sung. I never heard it done better than by our sergeant. Because of this, and because of his inordinate love of drill, I have but one image of him, striding stiff-backed a few feet apart from us, arms thrust out, hands clenched, head canted back, with the whole body following and the great voice ceaselessly bellowing, "Thrip fall your left! Thrip fall your left!" Sergeant Bellow marched us to the quartermaster's. It was there we were stripped of all vestiges of personality. It is the quartermasters who make soldiers, sailors, and marines. In their presence, one strips down. With each divestment, a trait is lost. The discard of a garment marks the quiet death of an idiosyncrasy. I take off my socks. Gone is a propensity for stripes, or clocks, or checks, or even solids. Ended is a tendency to combine purple socks with brown tie. My socks, henceforth, will be tan. They will neither be soiled, nor foiled, nor gaudy, nor restrained, nor holy. They will be tan. The only other thing they may be is clean. So it is with it all, until one stands naked, struggling with an embarrassment that is entirely lost on the laconic shades who work in quartermaster sheds. Within, in the depths the psychiatrist calls subliminal, a human spark still sputters. It will never go quite out. Its vigor, or its desuetude, is an exact proportion to the number of miles a man may put between himself and his camp. Thus naked, thus quivering, a man is defenseless before the quartermaster. Character clings to clothes that have gone into the discard, as skin and hair stick to adhesive tape. It is torn from you. Then the quartermaster shades swarm over you with measuring tape. A cascade of clothes falls upon you, washing you clean of personality. It is as though some monstrous cornucopia poised in the air above has been tilted, and a rain of caps, gloves, shoes, socks, underwear, shirts, belts, caps, coats falls upon your unfortunate head. When you have emerged from this, you are but a number. 351-391, USMCR. 20 minutes before, there had stood in your place a human being, surrounded by some 60 other human beings. But now, there stood one number among some 60 others, the sum of all to be a training platoon, but the parts to have no meaning except in the context of the whole. We looked alike, as Chinese seemed to Westerners, and, I suppose, vice versa. The color and cut of our hair still saved us, but in a minute, these two would fall. The cry rose as we marched to the barber's. "You'll be sorry!" Before the last syllable of the taunt had died away, the barber had sheared me. I think he needed 4, perhaps 5 strokes with his electric clipper. The last stroke completed the circle. I was now a number encased in khaki and encompassed by chaos. And it was the second of these twin denominators of Paris Island that was the real operative thing. In 6 weeks of training, there seemed not to exist a single pattern, apart from me.